Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1218, we have the second half of a story from Life Rattle founder Arnie Ackman. The first half of this story was aired August 21st last year. We will attach a link to that podcast with this week's show. We here at Life Rattle are nothing if not reliable. You can count on us to complete a series, but okay, we are slow, but we are reliable. Arnie Ackman was born in 1948 in Montreal. Ackman later worked as a store clerk, a short order cook, a dance studio caretaker, an independent performance artist, an actor, and he taught expressive writing at George Brown College and the University of Toronto. Ackman worked together with Guy Allen for 25 years to teach and promote their vision of autobiographical storytelling and writing as a form of community activism. Ackman broadcast the first Life Rattle radio show on February 6, 1988. Ackman and Allen collaborated with many others to build the Life Rattle radio program, Life Rattle Press, a nonprofit publisher of new writers, and the well-known, totally unknown Writers Festival. Arnie Ackman died on March 7th, 2005, and I do believe that Life Rattle carries on in large part to honor his memory by ensuring his legacy. So we're going to listen to the second part of Arnie's story, Sub, tonight. It takes us through the experiences of a brand new teacher. We all know the student side, so it's fascinating to hear what's going on at the front of the class. So let's listen now as Arnie Ackman reads the second half of his story titled Sub, here on Life Rattle. And remember, Life Rattle stories sometimes contain language and content that some listeners may find offensive, so listener discretion is advised.
Early Monday evening, I got a phone call from a guy I knew. He substitute taught in the East End. He found it rough, too. I felt relieved hearing that. I didn't feel so alone. It was good to talk to someone in the same position. I asked him how he handled himself. What did he do? He told me he carried a tiny pin with him when he walked up and down the aisles. With his arms folded, not stopping as he passed the troublemakers, he jabbed them with the pin very quickly so no one could tell he had done it. When I put down the phone, I suddenly felt very tired. I thought about the next day as I went back up to my room to sleep. The next morning, I repeated everything exactly as the morning before. Vitamins, exercises, coffee, and cigarettes. I lay on the living room couch until 8 o'clock. The phone didn't ring. I put out my cigarette, closed my eyes, and fell asleep for 2.5 hours. Wednesday was my day off. I let myself sleep until 8 o'clock. I took my vitamins and did my exercises. I made myself eggs and coffee and got ready to call the CBC. I waited till 20 after 10. I imagined the casting officer sitting there, waiting to hear from someone, having a coffee at her desk in one of those small offices. They were the same kind of rooms as the one where the guy spoke to us about substitute teaching, except the vinyl at the CBC was blue-gray. I got through to her. I told her my name, and that I had called last week and that she suggested I call back this week. I asked if there was anything happening. She said there was, but it was still too early to tell for sure what parts were available. If I called back next week, she would have more information. I asked if this was a good time of day to call. She said sure. We hung up, said goodbye. I thought it went well. It was short. I did business. I didn't feel rejected. The feeling lasted 2 hours. Then I started worrying over having no money and not doing anything. It was difficult to relax on my day off. At 4:45, I called the dispatcher's office for my zone of the school board. I gave my name and asked if there were any early cancellations for tomorrow. A terse woman's voice said it was too early. Substitutions were assigned in the morning. That night I thought of stuff to bring with me, a book, a lunch, in case I worked the next day. Thursday was vitamins and exercises at 6. It was still dark outside. Coffee and cigarettes at 7. The call came at 7:10 to go to a junior high school in the projects behind the Yorkdale Mall. This school was older than the first one. It was dark brick rectangle with dull yellow trim 3 stories high. The kids were different, too. They were bigger. Their skin tone was paler. Their clothes were less colorful. There were more black students. They were louder in the halls and quieter in the classrooms. They didn't talk back as much as kids at the other school. They were into not getting caught. Discipline at this school was more severe. Between periods, I saw one teacher, a guy in his late 30s, grab a student and pin him up against the hall lockers in the hall and shout 2 inches from his face that he didn't want to see him on that floor anymore that week. You got that? If I do, you are out of here, mister. Expelled. The kid waited until the teacher had finished talking and let go of him, then walked away slowly without looking back and joined a group of his friends. I told my classes to work quietly on whatever they wanted. Some girls flirted with me. I couldn't let my mind wander for too long. I kept walking and watching the clock. I was more aware of being watched all the time. This was what I originally expected substitute teaching to be. I could deal with this situation. I could ignore a lot of stuff as long as there was no direct confrontation. When I acted, though, it had to be swift and thorough. In the afternoon, I took a kid to the office. He was a short kid who talked back after the third time I caught him turned around in his seat. He said it wasn't only him. I was picking on him. He had rights. I told him to tell it to the vice principal at the office. He said no. I didn't expect that. I had to think of something fast. I lowered my voice and asked him again, was he going to the office? He said no. I pointed to the corner. I told him to stand there, facing the wall, and that I was taking him to the office at the end of the period. He said okay and walked to the back of the room. The rest of the kids left the room quickly at the bell. Mickey stood in the corner facing the wall until I called him to come with me. Kids clogged the halls going to their last class of the day. Mickey and I waited in the outer office for 5 minutes before the vice principal called us in. Mickey stood in front of the vice principal's desk. I stood behind Mickey to his left. The vice principal sat. His suit jacket hung over the back of his chair. He rolled his shirt sleeves up. His collar and tie were loosened. His hands slowly twirled a pen. The vice principal spoke to Mickey. His tone was neutral. He looked Mickey in the eye. He talked about good behavior, getting along with others, and disappointing his parents by causing trouble. Mickey looked down. The vice principal glanced at me and winked. I just stood there and took it. Then he dismissed us. I wanted to apologize to Mickey, but I didn't know how to. As we left the office, I smiled and waved to him. See you, I said. Mickey didn't look at me or say anything. I went to the staff room and stayed there for an hour. Outside was gray and slushy. Rain fell. Open sores of black grass smeared through the melted snow. I was not assigned a home room, so I didn't move at 3 o'clock. I waited for a while, after the kids were let out, before I went to the office to get released. A guy leaving the same time offered me a lift downtown. He was another substitute, doing it to get more teaching hours for a higher diploma. As we walked across the parking lot, faces turned down to avoid the rain, a student of his passed by. The teacher waved and smiled. He told the student he was lucky that they met in school. If he saw that kid on the street, the teacher told him, he'd punch his face in. When I got home, I went up to my room, lay in my hammock, and smoked a joint. I stared around the room. I turned on the radio until I heard the news and the weather, then turned it off. I tried to read for a while. I started to relax. Today began better than the first day. It ended much worse. I made another $40. If I worked tomorrow, it would be over $100 for the week. Over $100 for the week meant I could do a job. Then it would be Saturday. When I got out of my hammock to go downstairs for food, 4 hours had gone by. I woke up Friday with a sense of mission. I wanted to complete my first week of work. Exercises went well. 5 days in a row. I felt stretched and alert. The call came at 7:25. All right. Go back to the first school and substitute for the special ed teacher. This was something different, something new. There was no special ed when I was in high school. Outside was hard and bright when I got the bus. A few kids recognized me when I walked to the office. Hi, sir. We got you today? I checked my schedule. I had 2 double periods, both special ed, with a spare and lunch between them. I finished at 2:20. The special ed room was upstairs at one end of the hall. There were more shelves of books than in the regular classrooms. There were less than half as many desks, loosely arranged. I checked the class list. There were only 7 names. 5 kids sat at their desks. They didn't notice me. Another girl came in. When the 9 o'clock bell rang, I closed the door and turned to the students, 4 girls and 2 boys. The girls sat in a row by the windows. They looked heavier than other girls in the school. Their clothes were not as stylish. Their faces looked duller. One of the boys had mongoloid features with blonde hair. He sat in the middle of the room. His head tilted toward his right shoulder. The other boy had a muscle disease. He sat in front of the teacher's desk. His head twitched from side to side. His face was contorted. He wore thick glasses. His hands and feet moved spastically. The girls talked quietly among themselves. I thought of old oil paintings of women knitting together or doing laundry. The mongoloid kid got up from his seat. He walked, leading with his left shoulder and hip, and stood still beside the girls. He stared straight ahead. Then he walked over to the other boy and asked how he was. Did he need anything? The muscle-diseased kid waved his head and closed his mouth in a silent no. The mongoloid kid went back to his seat. He folded his hands on top of his desk. He sat there staring straight out, head tilted, for about 7 seconds. Then he got up and went over to the girls again. They acknowledged him without stopping their conversation. "Are you going to read to us?" the muscle-diseased kid spoke. His speech was labored and seemed painful. "What do you want me to read from?" "Our books," he said. He held a book that fell to the floor when he raised his arm. The mongoloid kid went over and picked it up. "Here is your book back, Jeffrey," he said. The book was a bunch of stories under different theme headings. Times We Are Alone, The Joy of Friends, Something I've Never Done, Something Unusual. "Do you have a favorite story?" "Something from nature and outdoors," said Jeffrey. "Do you want to take turns reading out loud?" "No, you read," said Jeffrey. The girls looked at me. They didn't say anything. They held their books, waiting for me to give them the page number. I picked a story about a flock of Canada geese. I asked if that was a good one. "Yes, read it," said Jeffrey. I announced the page. Then I turned to the girls and asked again if any of them wanted to read part of the story out loud. They looked at me in silence. "No, you read," said Jeffrey. I was not going to argue. This felt delicate. I didn't want to start anything that would blow it. The mongoloid kid stood beside his desk, hands by his side. He faced the front of the room and straightened his head. "Pride of the Skies is on page 68, he said in a loud, clear voice. He sat down. I began to read. A minute later, the door opened and a kid walked in. He was bigger than average. He wore jeans, unlaced winter boots, and a white Toronto hockey jersey with no number on the back. He smiled easily and nodded to me. "Hello, Joe," said the mongoloid kid. "We're reading a story in our books. It's called Pride of the Skies on page 68. "Yeah, that's nice, Al," said Joe. "What's happening, Jeffrey?" "Hi, sir, how are you?" "Mary Ellen, you learned to dance yet?" "Oh, Joe, be quiet," said Mary Ellen. The other girls almost giggled. "It's a good story, Joe," said Al, nodding to affirm his statement. "Hi, Joe," I said. "Want to sit down?" "Hey, Tiger, how's it going?" said Jeffrey. Joe walked around the back of the classroom. "You're reading, eh?" "No, I'll go out. I'll come back later," he smiled. "Okay," I smiled back. Joe left the room. The door closed quietly. I continued reading. I read three stories, all requests from Jeffrey. Al announced the title and page number of each story before I began. I got into it. Reading aloud to them felt peaceful. I was doing something useful. This class was not out to break me. After the third story, I suggested we try another activity. I was afraid their attention was waning. Al went over and stood by the girls. "What?" said Jeffrey. "Do you have anything to draw with?" "That's this afternoon. Read one from When We Are Alone." Jeffrey took a long time to say his words. I was at the end of his sentences long before he got his mouth around the last syllable. The girls continued their silence. Al stared right by me, hands by his sides, head tilted. Jeffrey's head looked at the ceiling, but through a weird refraction of his glasses, we seemed to make eye contact. "Is there any special story you'd like?" "No. You pick one. Just read," said Jeffrey. I picked the shortest one. Al went back to his seat and announced the title and page number. I could have read to those kids all day, but I was afraid it wasn't right. It felt too easy. After I finished the story, Jeffrey said, "You really read well, sir. You must really enjoy it." My cheeks burned. I felt exposed. "Yes, I do," I said. "Did you like the story, Jeffrey?" Jeffrey said yes. I turned to the girls and asked Mary Ellen if she liked the story. Mary Ellen said yes, too. I asked her what she liked about it. "Oh, it was good, you know," she said. "It was a good story, Mary Ellen," said Al. He nodded his head. I tried making conversation. It was difficult getting more than one-word answers. They didn't speak unless addressed by name. They were attentive. They were not talkative. Gradually, we exchanged sentences. Al told me he liked putting on three shirts in case he lost his coat, but that his mother didn't like that when she found him doing it. Sometimes three of the girls fluttered in surprise at what the fourth said. Al asked Jeffrey if he could hear all right. "Yes, thank you," Jeffrey said. Midway through the second period, Joe returned. I had given up conversation by this time and let the girls talk among themselves. Jeffrey and Al had a checkerboard and played quietly. I stood at the back of the room by the windows and tried not to disturb anyone. Joe came over to me. "Hi, sir. Not reading anymore, huh? What are you doing?" I looked out the window. "Not much, Joe. Just trying to stay alive. You?" "Trying to stay alive, sir, huh? That's good. Yeah, me too." "You want to do art this afternoon, Joe?"
"Me?
Art? Nah. Let's see a movie. Get all the stuff at the office. Just tell them it's for us." He walked away slowly, fingering the radiators and window ledges. I didn't want to lose him, but I didn't want to call after him. "Do you have any other work, Joe?"
"Me?
Yeah, why?"
"I could help you with it."
"You want to help me?"
"Okay, my work is in my locker. I'll go get it."
Joe left the room. He didn't return before the bell rang. In the staff room, I felt secretly excited. I couldn't believe it. I was going to make it. Just do this one more time, and that's it for the week. $100. I sat in a corner through lunch and read my paperback Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. 5 minutes before the end of lunch bell, I put away my book and started thinking about the afternoon double period. Watching movies was a great idea, but I was afraid to ask the office for equipment. When I got to the classroom, Joe was there. I asked him to go to the office for the projector and film. "You gotta get it, sir. They won't give us anything," he said. I went to the intercom and called the office. I asked if I could send a student from special ed to pick up a projector and films for the class. The woman at the office said I had to pick them up myself. I thanked her and put down the receiver. I told Joe to take care of things until I got back. I asked Jeffrey if he minded watching movies instead of drawing. Jeffrey said it was okay. I went to the office. The secretary gave me a key and told me to go to the audio-visual room for the equipment. The films were in a gray metal cupboard, which the key unlocked. I took 4 cans of film, locked the cupboard, and wheeled the projector tray into the hall. When I came in the classroom, Al stood up and announced we were going to have movies. He went to the wall and switched off the lights. I realized I didn't know how to operate the projector. A knot in my stomach shot up to my brain, making me wince. Joe came over and got everything going. Jeffrey told Mary Ellen to pull down the blinds. I rubbed the side of my head as each of the girls went to a window and pulled the blinds silently in unison. Those few seconds felt suspended, like slow motion. We watched films on canoeing in Northern Ontario, the Battle of Quebec, fruit farming in Niagara, and William Lyon Mackenzie. We watched the film on canoeing twice. At the end of the double period, I thanked the class.
"Yeah, that was good, sir," said Joe.
"Thank you for coming, sir," said Jeffrey.
"Thank you, sir," said Al.
He stood by his desk and stared right by me. The girls smiled at me. Joe helped me bring the projector and film back to the audio-visual room. We said goodbye. Joe called after a friend and ran down the hall. I returned the key to the office on my way to the staff room. I looked out the window. I watched the bus go by. I watched the clock move toward 3. I smiled and said thank you when I checked out. The bus ride downtown seemed shorter. It wasn't yet dark when I got home for the weekend.
That was the second and last part of Sub, written and read by Arnie Ackman. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1218. Life Rattle returns next Sunday night at 9 o'clock with more stories. Life Rattle is produced from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. My name is Virginia Ashbery.